Beauty and the Beast, you're in review. Ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba. Thank you for joining us for Beauty and the Beast, year in review, Tokyo Drift, a discussion into last year of Beauty and the Beast. As always, if you enjoy what we do, please like and subscribe, or check out beautyandthebeast.com for a full list of services we're available on. So this marks the third year in review that we're doing, where we discuss the last year of Beauty and the Beast, and just so happens to be approximately the third anniversary of Beauty and the Beast.
Ooh, a segue.
Yes. They're only awkward because he called them out instead of doing them.
I thought it was because they were those weird monologue.
Did you know that the inventor of the Segway died by on a Segway and rolling off a mountain?
Can't be real.
100%.
No, it can't be real. I have to do this.
Jimmy Heseldon. He died in 2010 from injuries sustained falling from a cliff while riding his own Segway PT.
All right, then.
Speaking of death, so I was kind of explaining before the podcast, I've been using a USB key in my car to listen to music, which kind of has me on this old rotation.
Yeah.
And essentially, I got a new phone. I've been too lazy to put all my music on the phone, but I want to listen to music while driving my car. So I have this old USB key that I made like a decade ago, and it's filled with all the music that I used to. And I'm beginning to like rediscover some of the old music that I was listening to. So getting back into the Flatliners, which has always been like one of my top tier bands, favorite bands.
Yep.
Rediscovering them has been really good. And then being reacquainted with a different mindset to Static X has been really nice.
Hmm.
Which is weird. I found out recently that Wayne Static from Static X and Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins were in a post-punk band before either Static X or the Smashing Pumpkins came together.
You mentioned that. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, something.
And when you mentioned it, because you didn't mention that it was, you just mentioned they were in a band together. I'm like one of those like weird super groups that was happening for a bit, or like the virtual bands that were happening, you know, in that 2000s. But no, it was before.
Yeah, it was like pretty sure it was like the 80s.
Damn.
Yeah, in fact, like Billy Corgan came out to talk about their friendship after Wayne Static had died. Rip Wayne Static. I mean, this last year, though, I've been, well, you know me, I've been solely listening to Sleep Token.
Yep.
Just Sleep Token. Like, my ways of, like, binging J-rock or K-pop or punk rock while we're playing games or talking during our post-recording after parties has just been replaced with, like, Sleep Token. I bet you could probably half sing some Sleep Token songs just from hearing me half sing Sleep Token songs while we play video games.
Oh, I don't know, because normally I'm singing like my stuff at the same time. when it comes to like the video game background music, it really depends on the game. Like, let's face it, we're familiar enough with this game that no, I can just pay attention to saying I'm not caring about the story or anything anymore.
Well, I mean, we experience the stories.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like any new stuff that you've come across over the last year that isn't like, you know, Bandmade, Scandal, Hailstorm, Evanescence.
I mean, you can't really call those ones new anymore, can we?
Pretty Reckless.
Okay, so I do have to share Pretty Reckless for, you know, actually getting to see them in concert this year.
How did you become the guy who goes to concerts when I used to be the guy who goes to concerts?
I live in a city where concerts go to.
We get ska.
I get ska out here too.
Get reggae.
Reggae is just ska without the brass. Ska's better.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing. I'd be silly to disagree to that.
Honestly, I think a lot of the concerts is I've reconnected with music. Mm. And so, like, I'm actively looking for them. So it's like, no, these are bands that I want to see. So I actively check every so often. Goes like, hey, cool. Are they touring or anything like that? So I can check them out.
Well, it's one of those things too, like the transitory nature and the finite lifespan of a band is really interesting. Like, I'll never be able to see Static X in their prime because Wayne Static has passed.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Evanescence is just, what's her face now?
Yeah, pretty much, but I'm fine with that.
I mean, it still would be nice to have seen Evanescence in their prime.
To be fair, like, that prime Evanescence didn't last the first tour. Mm. Like, it was pretty quick that changed around. Yeah, I think that's a big part of the concerts. But I mean, you talk about those primes, like, some of the... Like, me, you got to go some of the massive festivals.
Yeah.
Like, way back. It's like, I will never get that chance to see that. There's a couple of big concerts that I missed out on this year, unfortunately. Well, I mean, one that I'd consider... missed out on Tool coming.
Oh, I want to see Tool. That'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah. It just happened to be, like, literally the worst timing. It's like, oh, look, they're coming at the same time for this party that I've literally been planning what I'm doing for a year. And unfortunately had to miss Ginger as well. But I think that would have been amazing, especially considering, like, it was at a small venue. Like,
well, the way to see him,
like, smaller than, like, Starlight.
Really?
Oh yeah, like, it's like a
are you talking like
it's like a beer cave.
Okay, so more like the downstairs of Velvet Underground and not the upstairs.
Yeah. yeah. So, like, it would have been good. There would have been some injuries from that type of show. but unfortunately had to miss it. When it comes to music, I think some of the big things, Dorothy has been one that I've really gotten into a lot more this year. I was listening to, like, my year in review, and it was all over the place. Like, I found a lot of kind of cover bands. Yeah. So, you know, things in the vein of, like, Lauren Babbitt. I can't even remember. Black Lotus is one of the bands that I liked from that. I think I played not Black Lotus. Oh my god, my brain's gone dead.
Well, I, unrelated to you listening and discovering, like, Lauren Babbitt, also encountered her simply because she does a better version of Sleep Token's Atlantic than Sleep Token.
In my opinion. So good. So good.
Oh, it's such a wonderful song. Like, it's the emphasis that should have been on it.
Mm.
Like, that's, in my opinion, that's what the song should have been.
Yeah. I feel like there's a few songs like that we listened to. That one cover of Schism. Mm. Was it Elephant Revival?
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Is it Elephant Revival on that, like, that one singer that went crazy? They did the brass version of the Pot.
Brass Against?
Yeah, Brass Against.
Yeah.
So yeah. Good. I mean, we've known about that one for, like, ages, but...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just top tier. I think from the Japanese side of things, Nemophila and Hanabi have been the two bigger ones that I've gotten into. And I recently shared in the Discord the Nemophila's cover of Sugar, which is fantastic, and, you know, it's just as decipherable as Serge Tankian's version. So,
I mean, I think they were basing on that because I will say this nice, but I don't think the singer speaks English well.
Yeah.
Because it was very sounded out based on what Serge was singing.
Yeah.
Which was nearly nonsense in the original song. So like it divorced me from the song, but like a good cover, sure.
Yeah. I've enjoyed them. They've done some covers of like some other anime songs that I've heard. And just, yeah. Nice getting that medal. It's one of those things that I still find interesting. Since we've had this discussion. I'm not sure if we've... No, we must have had this discussion on recordings at some point. No, maybe not. Like, we will talk about, like, the Korean rock versus the Japanese rock and English rock. It's like being able to get that fry and distortion that just isn't there in the same way in the Korean stuff.
Mm.
Hearing it with that... Oh, tickles my brain in a good way.
Yeah, it's definitely weird to see like the differences even between like American singers versus Japanese versus Korean. Well, it's all interesting. Like to get into the right mood, I wonder if we were still playing God Eater, if I'd still be listening to Sleep Token. I mean, I was doing. I think I was heavy K-pop at that time, but to be honest, I think. To be fair, I think the era of K-pop is on the downswing. Mostly with BTS being on a downswing. Not that they've gotten worse. But, you know, they've been around for more than 7 years. They're going into the army. They've transitioned from pop stars to artists. And billions of dollars of revenue for South Korea because of BTS specifically.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's been and huge amounts of tourism, but I think K-pop itself is kind of on the downswing. I think they're going to find that they don't have the same kind of money coming in or the same kind of attraction, because there's other bands too. Two of the other biggest bands of this kind of era are Blackpink, which I think I've heard rumors that they're breaking up. I've showed you some of their stuff. Which is more hip hop, but visually your style.
Yeah.
And then there's Twice, which, like, even their music videos aren't, you know, pushing the millions and millions and millions that they used to.
I mean, I don't think I'm that surprised.
Well, I mean,
like one of the things to talk about is, like, I find, and I think this is the reason why a lot of the K-pop never clicked with me. Is it feels very like the manufacturing aspect of it aside, it's the symptoms of that. So it feels algorithmic. Like we're talking about off podcast one night about how when you listen to some of these big K-pop songs, you can literally see the six different styles that you know just became TikToks, each individually, which was something that I think was driving.
To be fair, and
to be fair,
it's indefensive, but it's not a good thing.
Yeah,
I think K-pop was the major drive of that TikTok music culture, because they were all about like. That catchy dance move in the middle of it, or the catchy chorus that everyone was singing and just like going ham. And that's the same chorus and the same dance move you see promoted on all the shows.
Yeah.
And TikTok just became the avenue. And I think it encouraged that behavior. So it's not a good thing, but it is indefensive. But I mean, it's just, I think it might be running out on the K-pop era. Like we had, what did we have? We went from the nu metal era into the R&B hip hop into the I'm a poppy version, but I'm still that quaint singer songwriter with the guitar. And maybe it's just the time. Like we had BTS, and going from BTS, the next big thing, like huge thing after BTS is T-Swift. And you got to give it to her. Like I mean, if her tickets weren't like a grand, I'd go see a concert.
Yeah.
But I mean, T-Swift probably wouldn't suit so well while we're playing video games.
Yeah, probably not. Yes, like she's a she's never tickled my brain in quite the same way. We've had that.
Yeah, I get it.
Had that discussion too. I'm much more a fan of Miley. I like that huskiness that she's got.
And then I don't think Miley would really do well when we're gaming, I guess you could say.
No, probably not.
So like we just finished Remnant 2's expansion. Something King. And it was quite good. It added the right kind of material. It was probably a bit short, but I don't know what the individual cost of it is. And it's nice to come back to that. We didn't get the same thing with Outriders, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Outriders Endgame was terrible. Remnant 2's Endgame has been fantastic. There's a reason why we've got like 120 hours in that game.
Yeah. And I mean, like, this time I think we're actually going to do a sincere APOC run.
Yeah.
So we're just going to skip the floating eyeball.
Mm.
Other than that, like, a few other games that I enjoyed playing this year. The Phantom Liberty from Cyberpunk was excellent.
Mm.
It was very James Bond spy thriller feeling.
Yeah. I haven't played Phantom Liberty yet.
I mean, they're
definitely on the list.
they built it in so that it not only affects the actual ending to the original game, but you can transition into it in your playthrough. So you don't have to wait to a specific time. You can kind of just stop what you're doing and go do Phantom Liberty and come back.
Mm.
And that was very excellent. I started playing Diablo 4, and it's an ARPG. There's nothing fantastic about it.
Just done some Baldur's Gate 3.
Excellent game. Story is trash, but the characters are fun and the gameplay is excellent.
Yeah, I've enjoyed what I've played from that. What else have I played? Tears of the Kingdom I've been playing. Put a good chunk of time in that. Stray. Was it Stray?
Oh, yeah. I heard really good things about Stray.
That one I really enjoyed. It's one of the games where it's like, I should probably go back and do like a different path playthrough because it's kind of that visual novel aspect. I think my biggest complaint with Stray was there was a couple of songs where it's like, when you were literally trying to mimic a musical, for the love of God, make sure you have the mixing right. Like, yeah. I understand that there's going to be issues with like the cadence and the beats and such, just as the songs are kind of changing on the fly, but I shouldn't be struggling to hear the lyrics because you have the music too loud.
True. That is very true.
Not that it was everywhere, but it was there often enough.
Well, I think you and I did, we did do the Tiny Tina game this year, right?
Yep. We did do Tiny Tina's. Yep. That was this year.
In informal review on that, probably the best gameplay out of the series, yet the Borderlands series, honestly, the dialogue and the entertaining factor has just been going downhill since 2.
Yeah, it's no Borderlands 2, but it's the closest we've had to Borderlands 2. Mm. Probably because it's based off of the best DLC
for Borderlands 2.
There may be a bit of a trend here. Let's see. We did a kind of a bunch of games. Was Batman was still this year too, wasn't it? Gotham Knight.
Well, let me check my Steam year in review.
Where do I find my year in review?
There was Hogwarts Legacy, which was a pretty okay game.
Yep.
Yeah, that's my review. It's pretty okay.
Yeah.
I put a bunch of time into it. It was decent.
I enjoyed the time I put into it. I didn't feel like it was wasted.
We played Redfall.
Yep, I knew we did Redfall.
Again, that's a $20 game. Not like a 95 or whatever we paid for it.
I think that was really the biggest issue with it. Like, I think it was all right, just not the full price game.
Gotham Knights, which I reiterate, the only reason why I played that game is because I was having fun playing with you, not because the game is good.
I thought the game was all right. Felt very much in the vein of the Arkham games. I think part of the discussion we had with that was you never really played the Arkham games.
Yeah.
So there was a familiarity difference there. So I think I fell into it a little bit more. But I can say there's nothing better than you going around and going, like, have you met Batgirl? And for whatever issues that game may have, first of all, it doesn't have the issues that people seem to say it did on release. Yeah, sure, there were some bugs, but...
I mean, any game.
Yeah.
Any you played game. Any game over the last 5 years?
Yeah. I think you agreed with this as well. I think the way they did Nightwing as a support character was like probably one of the best ways I've seen a support character.
Oh yeah, it's like it's your classic kind of monk style, but instead of healing, it's power generation, which I could expect in the healing, actually.
Yeah.
I like the roles there. I thought the characters were fine. The motorbiking was not nearly anything like motorbiking, of course. but the obstacle courses were fine, but it was like I felt the combat was clunky. It buffered inputs in a weird way. Like I would never play it on my own, but I had a good time simply because I was playing with you.
Yeah,
I guess. The other
game... I can see that the clunkiness with that. It's one of the big things with that bit of crossover from Arkham is it's a rhythm game.
Yeah,
without the rhythm game prompts, so that's why the buffering can feel odd and can feel that little bit clunky because you're not hitting the rhythm. But again, that's I think just a familiarity with how that style plays.
That being said, I think from the rhythm aspect, it did better than probably the last game that we played together, which was Soundfall, which was a fun game, but. They sure don't know how to deal with EDM.
They don't know how to deal with anything that's not 4/4 time.
That's true.
Like, I mean, the metal was doing the same thing. It's like, I know I'm listening to some like weird, you know, 15/8 time signature or something. And we're just still having to go one, like, you couldn't get lost in the rhythm like you should be able to.
Yeah.
Except for the songs where you could.
Well, I actually had to tap my foot 4/4. That being said, like, the game itself was fun. It's just its core concept of everything to the rhythm just did not succeed.
Yeah, there's a couple of like first person shooter rhythm games.
Isn't one of them like a roguelike first person rhythm thing? I think I heard something like that.
Yeah, there's a roguelike one. It's what I played the demo of, and it's like a bunch of metal. And again, it's just, it handles these weird time signatures very well still. Again, it's like, if you're going to make your game be about music, out of everything, make sure you actually have the rhythm. Like, over anything else, it is literally the only thing that matters. There's a reason why people like DDR and Rock Band, and it's not because of the graphics and such. It's literally the bars that are moving down the screen telling you what your rhythm is.
That's true.
Yeah. Crypt of the Necrodancer might be the roguelike you're thinking of.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. Which, again, I love like Crypt of the Necrodancer and the Cadence of Hyrule version of it as well. Let's see, other games that I have played. Put some time into Horizon Zero Dawn. It was, I lost it partway through. I really enjoyed the fact that we kind of dipped back into Borderlands 2 again.
Well, I do intend to go back. It's essentially like, because the harder content makes it more interesting.
Yeah. It's fun just kind of like W keying through through the first two playthroughs to get to that harder content.
Well, I've been watching AG to Q stuff this year, and I saw co-op speedrun of Borderlands 2. It's like, it's fun tech.
Yeah, I want to. It's one of the ones that I'd like to learn. Which how many player co-op was it?
Two
player.
So it was Gage and Axton.
Yeah, Gage and Axton would be.
A lot of weapon duping and critical stacking and.
Yeah, I know the four player one also will throw in Maya and Zero.
Mm.
Maya becomes just an XP machine.
Yeah, I could see that.
Zero literally one shots the bunker, which is probably the boss that's always given me the hardest trouble in that game. It just comes at that right point where the me W keying through things has finally caught up to me.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's almost like we're pretty much near that section right now where there are W keying caught up to us. And we had to pull back out.
Well, the part that I stop enjoying Borderlands is when you get to the city and you got to collect the Handsome Jack messages. That level is not enjoyable.
Yeah.
I've, of course, continued my unhealthy addiction to Destiny 2, which is not a microtransaction hell. And did not betray the fan base by losing money and having to lay off staff. That's the nature of business. It sucks.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. This is my rant. If you're criticizing Bungie for making a game and including cosmetic-only microtransactions, in the same breath, you're shilling, mofoing, freaking Raid Shadow Legends, you're a POS.
Yeah. Oh, I can say cosmetic-only microtransactions are, in my opinion, the acceptable microtransaction.
Yeah.
Way back to Call of Duty Ghosts, where you could get, like, the Snoop Dogg voice pack for the announcer. Like, those types of microtransactions, completely fine with. That being said, I may have been playing a mobile gacha game for the last 3-4 months.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know. I've always enjoyed the Fate series.
Oh, yeah. I heard that one can be bad, too.
For
the gacha.
Yeah. But it's, I don't know. I got enough of the team that I've just been going through. It's like literally just playing for the story. Not going to lie. Yep, I did put a little bit of money in it, but that's after I'd spent, you know, a good chunk of time in the games. So, there's nothing wrong with that. But
well, I mean, this happens. This happens to me sometimes. So, the currency that you can purchase in Destiny 2 is called silver. And not gonna lie, sometimes I get a little intoxicated, and then a couple weeks later, oh, thanks, drunk Drew. I just realized you bought a bunch of silver like 2 months ago. I will give myself that cosmetic.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing when it comes to these microtransactions. I did the same thing, like, way back I did the Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I don't mind putting money into this occasionally because, you know what? I'm getting a few hours content out of it every day. And for, you know, just something even just playing on lunch. After you spend, you know, 30 hours over the course of a few months, yeah, there's nothing wrong with putting it. Obviously, it's got enough of your attention. It's when you go and, become the whale and you have to spend that money. And
yeah,
because it's not cheap. That's, I think, probably the biggest issue with that.
Yeah, I'm so done. It's some of the content that I want to do on my own channel is just like calling out some of this silly stuff when it comes to like Destiny 2. So Twitter/X is just a bunch of children in school. And I feel like the Destiny community on Twitter/X can act like toddlers sometimes. They ask for a cookie, and because they didn't get it immediately and they have to wait until after dinner, it's obvious that they're not being listened to, and Bungie doesn't hear them,
Yeah,
it's every time. And when they finally get that cookie, it's never, hey, thanks. This is at least you trying to make good on a thing that we wanted. I don't like it. It's not my idealized version of it. You know what? This might be a good conversation for the old Bappy. Hey.
You know, on the top level, it's just, I'm like, oh, what was it? There was, I want to say it was Nintendo dev that said this a while ago. It's like, yeah, doesn't listen to the fans because the fans don't know what they want. Mm. And if you just listen to the fans, you get something super generic. And by, you know, just doing what you think you should be doing instead, you can, you know, make some real bangers of games.
Well, it's true to a degree. Like, the only time I don't agree with that is like when, frankly, it's just a bad story.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, the first game was about this unlikely duo, this man and this young girl surviving in this inhospitable world, and you become invested in the relationship. Oh, in the second game, within 10 minutes of playing, you beat the man to death with a golf club, and, you know, everybody's wrong and they're just haters because they don't like the replacement character.
I see nothing wrong with this. This seems like a stellar grade A game of the year type storyline. Let's face it. It was going for that Games with Impact feel and clearly nailed it because it had a big impact on the fan base.
Oh, geez. Yeah, and on his head with a golf club.
Yeah. Didn't say it was a good impact.
Anyways, you know what? It was a good impact for me.
Mm.
The second season of Bleach Thousand Year Blood War.
Mm.
Oh. They're remaining. They are changing parts of it from the comic only to enhance.
Yes.
And they are downplaying things that should be downplayed. Stuff that was long-winded in the comic, and it just, like, it feels right.
I mean, this has been, oh, it's just nice to, like, get back to Bleach. Like, I stopped Bleach, can't remember what the arc was. It was after the Arnka arc.
Mm.
It was like, he lost his powers, and it's like, it felt like filler, even though apparently it wasn't.
It was, so it was actually a transitionary arc.
Yeah.
Because they needed to have something there where he could fall further, and then, because he was depowered, actually get his powers back and not make it feel hollow.
Yeah. But it felt too filler to me, and I kind of lost track of it there. But then you just sent me that, the one panel of, like, Rukia going off with her Bankai. I'm like, and I'm in again.
All right, I'm reading the comic, and then it was funny. I was like, new episode, she does her Bankai, and they're like, your instant reply was like, I've already seen it.
Yeah.
I haven't been watching anything American or even any of, like, I haven't done any of the, like, my Korean survival music shows for the K-pop stars this year. It's just been Bleach, Jujutsu Kaisen, and
Heavenly Delusion.
Oh yeah, that was a nice binge.
That was good.
Honestly, not that great of a show, objectively, but there's a lot to talk about. A lot of interesting to talk about.
Yeah, I was engaged throughout. I would definitely, like, I think it's definitely worth the time. I think the only thing really American that I've watched, because I actually haven't watched the American version of it, the reality show Traitors. I've actually really enjoyed that one. There's basically like a Canadian, American, UK version, like all over the place. They all basically have very similar feel. But it actually felt a little bit closer to like the one Korean show that I watched, Devil's Game, I think is what it was called. You're getting a little bit more of that kind of strategy, and it's a really interesting concept. I've quite enjoyed that one. You know, anime wise, like, it's been a year for anime. Because Trigun was out this year.
Oh, yeah, and it feels like so long ago, and it was a banger.
It was a banger. Yeah. It was one that we were going to do on the second wall, but we didn't realize it came out until like four episodes in.
Yeah. And I'll say this, like, an unofficial review is I liked it more in the original series. I understand why people would like the original series better, but objectively speaking, the original series was better for the regarding the character of Vash, and the new Trigun was better for every other character, including Knives.
Yeah. I think they're very good. Just remember that they are different.
Yep.
Unlike the other anime that I also quite enjoyed was the remake of Kenshin.
I need to check that out still.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm basically doing the first arc, not without the filler. It's very similar, but, you know, little bits of difference because obviously it doesn't have the filler. But for the most part, quite enjoyed. It's not necessarily seeing too much different from the other one. I think it's a very good remake.
Well, that's what's nice about everything already being out, because you can make it more true to form. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's one of the reasons why Alchemist was good, but Brotherhood is just so much better.
Yeah. Or Helsing.
Yeah.
As well. But yeah, that's exactly it. Like, and I think that was one of the big things where people got annoyed with Trigun Stampede, was they were looking for a Brotherhood, and that's not what it is.
No.
Kenshin, however, is more akin to what they did with Brotherhood.
Oh, nice.
Right? It's the... You can just see that the filler is gone, and that they can expand things in the other ways. I mean, I even think for like the first chunk of episodes, I'm pretty sure things are happening in the same episodes. with the whole Megumi arc.
Mm-hmm.
And such.
Well, some of them like weren't that much of arcs. Yeah. It was like this thing happened, and then we went to this place and we talked to them again.
Mm.
There might have been a fight.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, like, I guess while I was recovering from my anime protagonism, I actually I watched like the first two seasons of, I guess watch is not the the right term. I half watched Eureka, first couple seasons of that. And that is honestly, like, that is the perfect background noise show. Like, it's just entertaining enough that you can kind of half watch, but you can vacuum or do your dishes or have it on in the background because you need to fall asleep sitting up because it's medically ordered.
Yeah. It was a fun show. 4400 was another good one around that time that I kind of enjoyed. See, there's a few other anime that I watched this year that, while aren't from the year, I think were really interesting. There's the Garden of Sinners series I watched. So it's by the same group that did the Fate series.
Okay.
Because like all of their universes kind of intertwine. And the character from Garden of Sinners is actually the one that ties them mostly. Like, she's actually in their other universes. I think it's one of those series that is going to be worth going doing a rewatch. It's basically a bunch of movies. But just, you can tell that it's much like some of the other videos we've done. There's the... there's things deeper to it than what you're necessarily seeing on a first watch. I think a lot of that just comes from you know, the visual novel style of storytelling. So it's the same thing in Fate.
Well, you know what's rough? Trying to watch Stay Night again.
So I agree. I ended up watching Heaven's Feel. which was a better story. but I actually fell into a rabbit hole around that for a bit. And part of what happened with Fate is because it was like the first thing they did and was definitely much more scientific than what the animes did.
Okay.
Yeah. What you see is you see the other things from Fate outside of it. So Apocrypha and Fate Zero and such are being better because they've made better stories.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of your first thing.
Zero came out and I was like, oh, I'm going to watch this, but I should watch Stay Night. But Zero was a prequel, right?
Yes.
So I was like, I watched Zero and then I'm like, okay, well then I'm going to watch Stay Night. And I'm like, this is trash.
Yep.
I'm not enjoying this at all.
Yep. Mistakes are made. and then there were a couple of other series that I ended up watching. It's like Darling in the Franxx.
Really?
Darling in the Franxx, actually thought was really good. Sure. Got its bit of horniness, but surprisingly not as much people made it out to be. And the other one was I Dream of Bunny Senpai.
Judging you based on that name.
Judge by the name, it is a very not horny show. Despite, like, in any way.
Yeah, you're about actually, to be like, yeah, you know, my life as a dog is actually quality.
I honestly would. I would put this closer into the tier of, like, not at that same level, but I definitely put some of the emotional impacts that hit in that show closer to something. Especially after watching the series and, like, the first movie from it. Like, I can say it's like there was a roller coaster. Like, mad. I think it's, you know, there's been a lot of the tourist talk.
Yeah.
And I think both Darling in the Franxx and Dream Bunny Girl Senpai, I think both of those are epitomized by the tourists. They see the first few episodes where it does have that little bit of horniness and that is it, and don't see anything else around it. Like, there's a very strong reason for the whole her being dressed up as a bunny girl, and you can tell people don't understand it.
The thing is, like, people are getting kind of it's weird, like, how people are being kind of prude about anime in this day and age compared to, like, how but they're actually, like, wearing their sexuality on their sleeve. Yet in the anime side, it's just like, oh no, she's showing some cleavage. She needs to cover that up. I don't.
Well, this is a big thing. Like, so with the Bunny Girl Senpai. So when I went to the last anime convention, there was definitely a lot of people that were cosplaying as that character. I mean, it's, you know, the standard Playboy bunny type look.
I want sexy gender bent wolf wood, okay?
Well, I mean, yeah. but that is such a small part of that show and is done for, like, legitimately not horny reasons.
I get you.
But you can tell that people, like, for both of these series, because people got really annoyed at Darling in the Franxx as well because of the way they pilot. And it's very clear that they've only watched the first couple episodes and didn't actually look at anything beyond that. Both I would actually strongly suggest. Dream of Bunny Girl more so than Darling in the Franxx. That's been what I've watched.
There hasn't been. This has been a weird life year, so there hasn't been too much that I've been into. I didn't even get to like motorbike as much as I'd like to this year.
That's what you get for, you know, almost losing an eye.
So let's see. My bike got parked in August. So it's going to be 6 months between having been parked and having been ridden. So before we wrap it up anyways, they're doing some work on the house that I live in.
Yeah.
And my landlady asked me if I could move my vehicle. And I'm like, of course, because, you know, easy access for the tradesmen that are going to come in.
Yeah.
So I moved my car and then I'm like, well, this is a running vehicle. I shouldn't just push my bike. That's a lot of energy, and I could just ride it over there. 45 feet. So next thing I know, and always wear gear, kids, but I'm riding around the block in one of the coldest weeks of Victoria this year. No gear, no jacket, no gloves on this motorbike. And I got the biggest smile you've ever seen. Because it's my freedom, right? So I'm like just riding around that. And then I parked it and I'm like, looks like it's going to be another end of February startup again.
Yeah, no, fair enough. It's been, I don't know, it's been a weird year.
Yeah.
Like, just lots of eventful things happening, but not like on the personal side of things that I'm not going to go into here. And then just like lots of like nothing. Like you said, nothing interesting from like American television, nothing interesting from really interesting from a lot of movies. This is the first year in like 20 years that I didn't go see a movie on Christmas because there was just like literally nothing to go see because we had already went and seen Boy and the Heron.
Well, I think my perspective is like, I heard a stat that like each year there's something like 2,200 series that are greenlit across all the services, TV, streaming, etc. And this last year it was like 1,200.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of finance implications. There was the strike, but I think places are beginning to realize like not every darn piece of media has to try to subvert something that came before it.
Well, I think they realize, well, I mean, there's definitely the aspect of, hey, it's not making money anymore. And, you know, it's getting to the point where they'd like to try to say, it's like, oh, just because you didn't like the subversion thing, well, you shouldn't go see it. Well, guess what? People stopped going to see it. And when all of a sudden, like, the biggest movies are two Japanese movies, and one of them was Godzilla in December. Mm. And there were some other movies that should have been big out at the same time. And they're not barely getting anything. And then the big movie of the year, Barbie, was, oh my god, it is not good.
I've heard both ways.
Go and watch it.
Well, to me, my perspective is it's the girl version of Spider-Man. Like superhero film for girls.
No, it is a fever dream of a movie.
Okay.
And like my, you know, when my mom, who, you know, isn't that big in films, goes like, that is one of the worst things that I have seen. Like, it just, we've talked a lot about films not knowing what they want to be and not saying the message that they think they're saying.
Yeah.
This movie epitomizes that in a way that's all I can say for it. And that was the biggest movie of the year. I haven't seen Oppenheimer. I can't say anything on that one.
I'm not especially interested.
But like all of the Disney movies were flops. like losing major money. Because people are tired of it. I think one of the big problems that we're going to have with film in general right now is it's going to be like, sure, people are realizing that, okay, this isn't working anymore, but it's going to be 4 or 5 years before we actually see anything turn around, because everything in production is already in production and has been.
Yeah. Well, really, like, my opinion is, and it's probably a conversation for another time, but we need smaller budget original IPs.
Yes.
Like,
100%.
Not everything has to be $100 million or $500 million. No. Yeah. I mean, look at Mission Impossible came out. I know that was original remake.
Yeah.
And you relate the Mission Impossible that came out in like the 90s or whatever compared to the most recent one. They are nowhere near alike, but that became a profit-making machine.
Yeah.
So from a profit standpoint, like, take some chances. Smaller, low budget IPs, original characters, original IP, because people are starving for it. They don't want a remake where you just...
They want original stories, and when you're using a lower budget, there's no risk in doing those types of stories. I mean, there is a reason why found footage horror films are still churned out, because they are cheap and it does not take much to get your money back.
Mm-hmm.
And movie is a success if you get your money back. And we get these other there's just a lot of indie films that have come out in the last while that have just been good films and managed to get through the sludge.
Mm-hmm. It's true. But with that, I think we should cut it off, because
good conversation.
Yeah, great conversation. As always, if you enjoy what we do, like and subscribe, join the conversation in the comments or at our Discord, or check out Beardy and the Beast for a list of services we're available on. This has been Beardy and the Beast. Fiend.